Breaking news tonight. Fired FBI Director James Comey blasting President Trump as unethical and untethered to truth. Explosive new details from his new book before it's released. Comey likening the president to a mob boss. President Trump now has the military options in hand, and sources tell NBC News the U.S. has new evidence of chemical weapons. Is a strike on Syria happening tonight? A tragic accident and a 911 dispatcher now suspended after a teen pleads for help before being suffocated inside his minivan. Why weren't police able to find him? Did they assume it was a prank call? My exclusive interview with the jailed rapper who has major celebrities, business titans, and politicians rallying for him to be released.
It was always a thought in the back of my mind that 10 years of probation would bring me back to prison.
Meek Mill breaks his silence from behind bars, and a major new study on alcohol and living a longer life.
This is NBC Nightly News with Lester Holt.
Good evening and welcome to our viewers in the West. For months, he has held his silence, but tonight, James Comey, a looming shadow over the special counsel's investigation into the Trump campaign, is finally telling his story. The former FBI boss, fired by President Trump, is about to release his new book, and tonight, quotes attributed to that book reveal Comey's interactions with the president, how he saw the limits of loyalty, and what he got wrong about the Clinton email investigation. NBC's Kristen Welker has details.
In his explosive, soon-to-be-released book, former FBI Director James Comey calls the president untethered to the truth, unethical, ego-driven, and even compared him to famed mob hitman Sammy the Bull. According to reports of excerpts not confirmed by NBC News, the book, A Higher Loyalty, gives new details about interactions Comey had with the president, including that now infamous dinner, where Comey says Mr. Trump demanded his loyalty. Comey writing, the president said, quote, I need loyalty. I expect loyalty. Comey was pressed on Capitol Hill about the dinner.
Because I was playing in my mind, because I was going to remember every word he said, I was playing in my mind, what should my response be? And that's why I very carefully chose the words. And look, I've seen the tweet about tapes. Lordy, I hope there are tapes.
Comey also reportedly writes that he regrets some of the wording he used in the press conference in which he announced his decision not to prosecute Hillary Clinton for her use of a private email server. The president fired Comey last May, which led to the appointment of the special counsel, Robert Mueller. This week, Mr. Trump musing about firing Mueller, infuriated by the FBI raid of his personal lawyer, looking for documents about payouts between a porn star and playmate.
We'll see what happens.
Today, turning down the heat, tweeting, I have agreed with the historically cooperative, disciplined approach that we have engaged in with Robert Mueller, even as his allies work to undermine the entire investigation, focusing their fire at Deputy Attorney General Rod Rosenstein, who's overseeing Mueller. Rosenstein was at the White House today, meeting with the president over routine business, according to an official. Hours after lawyer Joe DiGenova, who almost joined the president's legal team, said this.
Rod Rosenstein. Stein is so incompetent, compromised, and conflicted that he can no longer serve as the deputy attorney general.
Former chief strategist Steve Bannon telling the Washington Post the president should fire Rosenstein, but establishment Republicans warning.
Bannon ought to stay out of this, and certainly Rosenstein has a reputation of honor and integrity.
As for Comey and his regrets about some of the language he used during the investigation into Hillary Clinton, Comey says ultimately he believes he did the right thing. Lester.
Kristen Welker at the White House. Thank you. There's more developing news we're following this evening. The White House has moved a step closer to launching an air assault on Syria. President Trump and his national security team met today to review options, targets, and timing. The 11th hour decisions being made as the U.S. confirms the type of weapons Syria used in that attack that killed dozens and horrified the world. Our Hallie Jackson has details.
A White House huddle tonight. President Trump's top advisors in and out to talk next steps in Syria behind closed doors.
Now we have to make some further decisions, so they'll be made fairly soon.
The president presented with multiple military options. U.S. officials say those range from targeted Tomahawk strikes on Syrian sites, similar to last year's, to something more wide-ranging, like a sustained campaign aimed at affecting military operations and multiple targets. Any action? Retaliation against the Assad regime for yet another suspected chemical weapons attack that killed dozens of Syrian civilians, even children. U.N. Ambassador Nikki Haley with NBC's Andrea Mitchell.
We definitely have enough proof But now we just have to be thoughtful in our reaction.
Tonight, NBC News has learned of new evidence that shows both chlorine gas and a nerve agent in samples taken from victims, according to two U.S. officials familiar with the intelligence. One source tells NBC News the U.S. government is confident the Syrian dictator was behind the horrific attack.
Our strategy is to engage by, with, and through allies in all things we do.
Those allies include France and the U.K., where Prime Minister Theresa May called her cabinet back to town for an emergency meeting, agreeing on action to deter Assad. President Emmanuel Macron says he has proof the Syrian dictator did go after his own people. Any strike might be imminent, or it might be a while. At least that's what President Trump is suggesting. After seeming to telegraph his military moves just yesterday, now trying to re-inject the element of surprise, tweeting coyly, could be very soon or not so soon at all. A White House official tells me President Trump spoke tonight with the leaders of both the U.K. and France. And while Defense Secretary Jim Mattis has canceled a planned trip to New York tonight to stay in town, we're told no final decision has been made about potential military action. Lester.
All right. Hallie Jackson, thank you. As the world hangs in suspense, waiting to learn if and when the U.S. will strike Syria, the Syrian dictator's forces, with the support of Russian troops, have now retaken the site of that deadly suspected chemical attack. NBC News chief foreign correspondent Richard Engel is in the region with new images from inside the war zone.
Russian troops moved into the town of Douma today and were greeted, at least according to Russian and Syrian state TV, by victory celebrations. This was the rebel-held area where Syrian President Bashar al-Assad allegedly launched that suspected chemical attack, killing families in their homes. Now, back under Assad's control. Assad's forces have long been protected by Russia, which has thousands of troops in Syria and sophisticated air defenses deployed in the country. Russia now vowing to shoot down any incoming U.S. missiles.
The Russians are moving in two directions simultaneously. First, preparing to move to more defensible, secure positions in case they're struck. And secondly, preparing to respond to an American attack.
A key concern now, what happens if a U.S. strike accidentally hits Russian forces? So tonight, the most important weapon in the U.S. arsenal may be communications. A senior U.S. military official told NBC News Moscow and Washington have been in high-level talks through so-called deconfliction hotlines, with U.S. officials making Washington's intent, quote, very clear. But will that be enough once missiles start to fly?
There is a concern in this part of the world, Lester, tonight that any U.S. military action because of all these constraints will just be a slap on the wrist and that at the end of the day, Assad will remain in power and the Syrian people will still be very vulnerable. Lester.
All right. Richard Engel, thank you. A contentious showdown today for President Trump's nominee for Secretary of State, current CIA Director Mike Pompeo. He faced a barrage of questions on his interactions with President Trump about the Russia investigation and on a range of hot-button issues he'll face, from Iran to North Korea. Our chief foreign affairs correspondent, Andrea Mitchell, was there.
Do you think you can really get the State Department back on track?
Mike Pompeo's fitness to be Secretary of State and the Mueller probe taking center stage. Doubts about whether he would stand up to an unpredictable president.
When the leader of our country speaks with the full might of the most powerful military in the world has ever known behind him, he must choose his words carefully.
Will you support the president's worst instincts?
Pompeo refusing to say whether the president had asked him to block the investigation of former National Security Advisor Michael Flynn.
Did President Trump ever discuss the FBI or special counsel Russia's investigation with you?
Senator, again, I'm not going to talk about private conversations I've had with the president.
Would he resign if the president fired Bob Mueller or Rod Rosenstein?
My instincts tell me no.
Facing challenges to his hard-line positions, Pompeo now saying he is not a hawk, does not want to overthrow Kim Jong-un, agrees Iran is not cheating on the nuclear deal, and says he is not anti-Muslim, despite past comments. What about his criticism of gay marriage?
Do you believe that gay sex is a perversion? Yes or no?
Senator,
do you believe that gay sex is a perversion?
My respect for every individual, regardless of their sexual orientation, is the same.
But Pompeo winning points for promising to rebuild a hollowed-out State Department, including 37 vacant ambassadorships. In a closely divided Senate, Democrats complained Pompeo was evasive, but the Republican chairman says he will fight to get him on the job. Andrea Mitchell, NBC News at the Capitol.
Tonight, there's growing pressure on the governor of Missouri to resign. Eric Greitens, a once rising star in the Republican Party, now finds himself at the center of a storm. What was once a sex scandal and an extramarital affair now involves allegations of misconduct and blackmail. NBC's Blake McCoy is in Jefferson City.
Tonight, mounting calls for Missouri's governor to resign or risk impeachment.
It is clear to me that this governor must resign. And if he fails to do so, I believe we should begin impeachment proceedings.
The testimony outlined in the report is beyond disturbing.
That newly released bipartisan report details Governor Eric Greitens' affair a year before he was elected, finding the woman overall credible in her claims. Coerced, maybe, she says, into giving oral sex while tied up and blindfolded. In a subsequent encounter, he kind of smacked me and grabbed me and shoved me down on the ground. I just laid there, crying. Greitens is set to stand trial next month for felony invasion of privacy for allegedly trying to blackmail the woman into silence using a naked photograph, something he denies, along with the sexual violence.
This is a political witch hunt. A jury of my peers will let every person in Missouri know the truth and prove my innocence.
I think the innocent until proven guilty is kind of lost in this country right now.
Do you think he's still able to lead?
I think he's lost a lot of respect.
Tonight, the embattled governor remains defiant, calling the report false and the claims hurtful. Blake McCoy, NBC News, Jefferson City, Missouri.
Let's turn now to an NBC News exclusive. We are hearing from the Philadelphia rap superstar whose stiff sentence over probation violations has garnered national attention and calls for criminal justice reform and even enlisted the support of Jay-Z. So compelling is Meek Mill's story that his prison visitors have included everyone from billionaire sports moguls to the mayor of Philadelphia.
How does it feel to be part of the system?
He's become a symbol for criminal justice reform. And a viral sensation on social media. Meek Mill, a jailed rap star who has attracted the support of some of the biggest names in entertainment and sports. Just this week, a prison visit from 76ers owner Mike Rubin and Patriots owner Robert Kraft.
He's an amazing young man.
The 30-year-old has had a meteoric rise from a tough Philadelphia neighborhood.
Walking through the neighborhood, there's bullet holes in the windows, bullet holes in cars when you walk into school.
See, my dreams unfold, nightmares come true.
His troubles began in 2007 when he was 19, convicted on gun possession and drug charges. He served just 7 months back then, but Mill has never gotten off probation. And even though he hasn't been convicted of another crime, he's back in prison. I spoke to him by telephone yesterday.
It was always a thought in the back of my mind that 10 years of probation would bring me back to prison.
And he was right, because he got arrested again, twice. Last year, he was caught popping a wheelie on a motorcycle and was also involved in a separate altercation. Both charges were dismissed. Even so, Judge Janice Brinkley found him in technical violation of his probation and in November sentenced him to 2 to 4 years in prison. The sentence sparked an outrage. Jay-Z penned an op-ed in the New York Times saying, "What's happening to Meek Mill is just one example of how our criminal justice system entraps and harasses hundreds of thousands of black people every day." Philadelphia's brand new DA ran as a criminal justice reformer and agrees the system needs fixing.
Across the board, African Americans are ending up with worse sentences over and over than white people, even if you control for the type of offense.
DA Krasner does not oppose Mill's release, nor does his probation officer, not even the governor, but the judge hasn't budged.
People are having trouble understanding why he's still behind bars.
Well, we each have a lane. The judge has a lane, and the prosecutor has a lane. The governor has a lane. They are different lanes, and they have independent powers.
Now, Meek Mill has new hope. His original conviction could get overturned. It turns out the arresting officer's name was on a recently released list of cops that prosecutors deemed too unreliable to testify.
We now have information that was not available to the judge at the beginning, and that is in no way her fault, indicating that there are questions about the integrity of the conviction, and those questions are substantial.
What is next for you when you get out of prison? Is this going to be your passion?
I think God delivered me a job to helping people, helping minorities that come from these situations like myself. I say, don't show me no pity, because this is my life. This is what I've been going through, and I think God put me in this position to be able to do a show with Lester Hall and open up eyes for other young black men.
Meek Mill faces another hearing in this case this Monday. There's a lot more to tell you about this as we continue tonight. Still ahead, 911 controversy. A teen who called multiple times for help found crushed to death in a popular minivan model. The dispatcher placed on leave. Also, the new warning this evening about how much drinking is too much. We're back now with the troubling questions about the tragic death of a 16-year-old boy in Ohio. He called 911 multiple times, pleading for help after he was pinned under the rear seat of a minivan. But authorities, who may have feared the call was a prank, never found the victim. NBC News national correspondent Miguel Almaguer has the story.
I'm in help. Help. Help.
When 16-year-old Kyle Plush was trapped in his minivan out of reach from his cell phone, he used voice commands to call 911.
I'm stuck in my van outside the 7 Hills Webb parking lot.
The 7 Hills Webb parking lot?
The teen, who could not hear operators, tried to relay his location in a school parking lot. The rear folding seat had somehow flipped over and pinned him.
I'm gonna die here.
After a dispatcher called Plush back, the teen made a second call to 911.
I probably don't have much time left to tell my mom that I love her if I die. This is not a joke. This is not a joke.
Today, Cincinnati police confirmed 12 minutes after the first call, officers couldn't find the van. But the police chief now says the dispatcher who received Plush's second call,
send officers immediately. I'm almost dead.
Never conveyed the detailed information to officers, who may have feared the call was a prank.
Something went wrong here, and we need to find out why we weren't able to provide that help that we hoped we could have.
6 hours later, Plush's father found his son dead in the van. A dispatcher has been placed on leave as police investigate. Miguel Almaguer, NBC News.
Spring weather is on the way across the country. Blizzard warnings have been issued for parts of the plains for winds gusting over 50 miles per hour and near zero visibility due to blowing snow Friday through early Saturday. Meantime, 18 million are at risk of severe storms from Iowa to Texas tomorrow. Tornadoes are possible. And as all that happens, the major warm-up is on the way in the east. Temperatures in the 70s and 80s before dropping back down over the weekend. It's a new warning about the toll drinking takes on your health. Having more than 5 to 6 glasses of wine or pints of beer per week could shorten your life, according to a new study. That's less than recommended limits in the U.S. that say men can have up to 2 drinks a day and women can have up to 1 a day. Up next here tonight, the teen living every kid's dream, getting paid to play video games. Finally, tonight, think your kids spend too much time playing video games? You might change your mind when you see all that time in front of screens could mean big money. NBC's Joe Fryer takes us into the new frontier of competitive gaming.
It feels like a big-time sporting event, but the gladiators inside this packed arena play video games.
What a big hole!
This is a professional league devoted to a team-based action game called Overwatch.
It's only natural when millions of people have a hobby that they want to know who's the best in the world.
Give it a score. Give us one.
On this night, all eyes are on a teenage rookie making his debut, J-Wan, nicknamed Sinatra.
It's been my dream since I was like 12, basically.
Mom Michaela tolerated his obsession with video games as long as he got B's in school.
So you never threw the Xbox away?
I did once. He did something bad in school, so I threw it away.
With the dexterity of a champion speed typist, Sinatra became the esports version of a top draft pick.
Now it gives you like an ego, which you kind of want. You want to be like cocky a little bit, but not like too cocky.
After a bidding war, he just signed with the San Francisco Shock for $150,000 a season.
He makes way more money than me, you know what I mean?
But he couldn't start playing until he turned 18. His first game, a hard-fought battle that ended with a tough loss. But leave it to mom to remind him it's not game over. It's just the beginning.
You did it. You're awesome. It's fun.
Joe Fryer, NBC News, Burbank, California.
No, you didn't.
All right, kids, I know what you're thinking, but there's probably still homework to do. We appreciate you spending part of your evening with us. That is Nightly News for this Thursday night. I'm Lester Holt. And for all of us at NBC News, thank you for watching and good night.